Hello, everyone, and welcome to Bald Move Television. We're the officially unofficial podcast for all of television. I'm your host, Aaron.
I'm Jim.
And I'm Cecily.
And boy, I feel like we're really living up to our mandate today. We're going to be talking about the new Netflix original, I Am Mother. Season 5 of Black Mirror returns after they hit us up with Bandersnatch. Three more episodes. We've seen the first two, Striking Vipers and Smithereen. We'll be talking about that. We've seen the totality of Good Omens, and we're going to be talking about the wrap-up for season one of that, and then we'll have some comments on Handmaid's Tale. At the end of the podcast, shall we start with I Am Mother?
Mm-hmm.
What did you guys think of I Am Mother that starred Hilary Swank, some young woman I've never seen before, and Rose Byrne playing a giant robot mother?
I liked it. I wasn't prepared for it to be good. You know, when I saw Hilary Swank pop back up, it makes you think that it's going to be just another, like, cheesy horror movie.
Why do you... Because I guess I don't... I associate Hilary Swank with, like, quality entertainment. And you seem to associate her with, like, sci-fi madness. And I'm...
I mean, when's the last time you've seen Hilary Swank in a quality movie?
Million Dollar Baby? It's been a while.
Yeah, it's been a while.
I haven't seen a lot of Hilary Swank movies
since
then. I'm
sure she's been in others, though.
Oh, sure. But recently?
Oh, I tell you what, she was that like Amish assassin from The Bridge, season 2.
I don't know if that's helping your case.
That wasn't Hilary Swank.
Oh, you're right. That was the Lola Run. Okay, yeah. Well, yeah, I don't know what the hell I'm talking about.
Yeah, no.
But I'm with you, Aaron. I associate Hilary Swank with quality. So I was excited about this.
All right. Oh, I liked the movie. I was wrong.
I thought the movie fell in a little bit of a valley where it's like it's too smart to be as dumb as it is in places, but it's also too smart. It's too dumb to be as smart as what it's going for.
I'm curious to crack into that a little bit more because I think this movie is pretty smart, but also I had its number in the first 3 minutes.
Right,
yes.
Me too.
I knew exactly what they were getting at.
Although, it's funny because I thought I was even more... are we going to talk spoilers on this? Because here's the thing.
Yeah. Eventually. Let's not go into them now.
The premise is you are joined in the action a day after some apocalyptic event. Mm-hmm. And there is a bunker where this robot wakes up and it selects an embryo from this bank of embryos. And then it gestates this thing. And we see it raise this child from infancy to about a 16-year-old.
Extinction repopulation facility.
Yeah.
So you get the general idea just with that subtitle of what's actually happened.
Yeah, that there's this robot initiative to reboot humanity.
Yeah.
And this child is raised to the best of this machine's ability. It undergoes a robust education, including arts and music and philosophy and ethics, morality. And then this plan is disrupted at the end of the first act, like they do. And then the girl has reason to distrust the system and the mother and the AI. And, then it becomes a fairly, conventional sci-fi, robot panic is kind of selling it short, but that's what it's going for. Mm-hmm. And that's the core of my concern is, like I said, it's too smart to handle some of these issues, I think this film is essentially kind of like, man, secular ethics and morality, utilitarianism, mm-hmm. it can get pretty scary at its margins, and that's all true, but this is such a surface level examination of that I feel like the movie's smart, it should have gone and actually said something definitive rather than just like, I'm just raising questions, man. That's what I found frustrating about it.
Yeah.
Yeah, it feels a little sophomoric in its navel-gazing about artificial intelligence and its role within society. And that was my biggest problem with the movie. I think it's a story well told, but it's also a story that I, as an individual, didn't need to see because I've seen it.
And right.
thought
even
about
at
it
one
and
point, like,
discovered it many times.
Giving us a lecture on ethics and the studies that they're drawing from.
And that's going to become a theme to some of my reviews here is like some of this stuff, it's not that it's bad. It's just that like these are 101 level courses and I'm kind of like at 200 to 300 level on some of this stuff. And I'm looking for the next thing that's going to the next curriculum. And I get this. And
our society is dealing with like 301 problems at this point. Like we need to step up our education of the populace because.
But that's necessarily going to be a lot of 101 stuff in popular culture. So I can't like I can't be frustrated by that, but I am as a.
No, I think this is a movie for young adults, not for 37-year-old dudes
that's
like
true.
Me.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Probably plays a lot better if you haven't, you know, had the experience with artificial intelligence thinkings and readings and viewings that I have.
Right. Because it is, it does have a lot of like, you know, like I said, it gets you to where you're ready to ask these questions. But like, I'm like, yeah, no, we actually should have been asking these questions years ago and kind of should get to some useful answers about this stuff. I don't know. Every time it's so funny because just yesterday I was watching two people on YouTube debate utilitarianism and like where the line is. And I thought it was kind of interesting and fascinating, but it's always interesting to see that whatever line you end up drawing in utilitarian, like anyone that's one inch further thinks you're a monster. And anyone that's, you know, one inch further the other way seems like a monster to you. And, that's what I'm saying. Like I'm hungry for a piece of entertainment that can kind of like move the needle or like not just raise the question, but suggest here is a way forward. And you know,
It's interesting because we also watched a couple episodes of Black Mirror, which we'll get to, but I feel like there's a tie between those two things where the second episode of Black Mirror kind of raises some sort of interesting things around like social media and how it can kind of spin out of control. And I feel like we're doomed to sort of repeat that cycle with artificial intelligence, which is a, in my opinion, much more dangerous thing.
Sure.
Because of scenarios exactly like we see in I Am Mother, where it just sort of spins out of control, not anyone's fault, but people just aren't coming up with answers. The answers that are put in place are put in for the wrong reasons.
Right.
Stuff like that.
But this shit literally was kind of beat to death in the days of Asimov and Niven. You know, like, damn, I'm surprised that at the cusp on the, as we crossed the threshold, and we all turn into Sean Connery, I'm kind of surprised that there isn't anything kind of new to say. But I also had a little problems with the world building. Like, there's a couple of scenarios where the young woman gets away with exploration and like poking around at the edges of this facility that it doesn't seem like she should get away with. But on the other hand, by the end of the movie, literally this is kind of like a GLaDOS from Portal that, which by the way, that game steals a lot of thunder from this movie too. Everything is a test. So, like, the fact that this little girl can go up to the airlock and open it without Mother being aware of it, like, well, of course Mother's aware of it. It's just a fucking test. The fact that Hillary Swank got shot, was able to go to the thing, is a test. The fact that Hillary Swank was allowed to live in the wasteland, apparently part of the test.
Right.
Mm-hmm. So, like, maybe the movie actually isn't dumb. It's just literally any inconsistency. Like, why? There's a scene where she sneaks off with Mother's hand. I have no idea how she became in possession of
like,
that
was
hand.
It a decommissioned hand?
I think it was,
and it just left at 11. That's hand. Dumb, but like, but it's a test. Everything's a test. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Everything that's any logical inconsequence or any gaps in Mother's programming is just her testing. And there's a couple of things like I did rough math when I saw it, like 13,700 days later.
Well, that's what I mean. 3 minutes in, I was like, oh, that's for about 40 years. Yeah. Hillary Swank's in this.
I thought Hillary Swank was generation one that escaped.
Yes.
Because this, all the way they, and I
well,
think
there's nothing in there that says she isn't. I think she is.
Right. And these two women, there's no way they didn't cast them to look so similar without that being a question you should ask. Or
for sure. I think she is.
Yeah, me too.
Oh. Yeah, okay, because that's the thing that's, like I said, almost every question you have might actually be the person saying, oh, it's just part of the test. Because, like,
I think we saw like 3 embryos missing. One of them was definitely burned up in the incinerator.
That was number 2. Number 3 is the daughter that we follow the entire
number
movie.
Number 1 is Hilary Swank. Yeah. She's about it. Yeah, but like, so. But some of that stuff doesn't hold up to close scrutiny. Like, why would the android keep the ashes? Why would mother keep the ashes of embryo 2?
It's all a test.
It's all part of the plan. See, like, this is all. That's none, what I this mean. Is the thing that I don't think is plausible. Is that the idea that you could design a test this? Man, I don't know how to describe it. A test that would be this intricate that would actually work out the way you think it would work out. There's no. And with, I don't know how you're doing your double blinds here. Like, I don't know how you're getting to this path of, like, here's the perfect thing I need to do at this moment as a robot AI to push this further along.
Right. And the choice to make the first 3 all women was interesting, too. Mm-hmm.
I think it just has, like, a template that it's starting from. Like, okay, I'm going to make this one person who's going to be a female and is going to have these traits, going to be, you know, this utilitarian in their thinking, and it just kept trying that a few times until it got it.
Oh, see, but
a plan that it knew would lead to
worse than
that,
because, like, if they had established this has been going on for like 1,000 years and like this is just the finally they got it right, but because what you're suggesting is first embryo was raised just to be the ethical dilemma for the third embryo, the second embryo was designed to test the idea of the third embryo's utilitarian, like how much they embraced utilitarianism. Mm-hmm. And like, so like this complicated human experiment was fully realized and envisioned the very first time this AI went about doing it. Like like, if it turns out that this is like a Matrix thing, like this is the 7th Zion that we've had, like then I'm like, okay, I'm back in again. But
even then, I'm not sure how deterministic humans' behavior is.
Right.
How much can you actually predict what a human will do in any given scenario? I think the question is open. And this movie sort of just comes down on a side of human behavior is deterministic and these robots have figured it out.
Mm. And I just, but I don't even know that I agree with that, because at the end I'm left with, like, what is the actual truth? Mm-hmm. What is the moral that I'm supposed to learn from this? Because I don't know where the movie stands on the idea of burning human civilization down and, like, in a laboratory trying to build it better.
Right.
Because I thought I knew what it said, but then when Mother visited Hilary Swank, I'm like, I don't know what the movie thinks about the that.
Right. Is this next test to give it to the daughter so she can raise her brother?
Yeah.
Give the facility and see what she does there?
But the facility still exists. It still has the artificial intelligence all around. Like, she killed, like, they made a point to where, like, that's the other thing. Like, the movie did this moment where she kills Mother, but it just, in excruciatingly detail, told how impossible that thing is.
Right.
And I'm thinking, like, okay, well, maybe Mother did, like, this wasn't the latest test. Like, you're ready to take the reins when you have, you know, killed me, or you've passed a test and you're compassionate towards humans. But then again, they make it clear that Mother's still around because she goes and kills Hilary Swank.
Yeah, she's got a ton of her copies out there. So, and how many of these facilities exist?
Right.
Yeah, we don't know that. Yeah.
And they did mention, Hilary Swank mentioned something about mines.
Yeah.
With other humans in them
that
they can't
locate. But
that might
have been all bullshit. Because
If Hilary Swank was one of the first clones, would she have any memory? Clone, I don't know why I'm calling them the clones. First embryos.
Because she does look a lot like Hilary Swank.
Yeah.
Hilary Swank.
Wouldn't she have any memory of coming to that facility?
These are all questions
or
that
coming
I. Because she was found as a baby. So, like, all. Like, so were all the miners. Like, was that just an embedded story? Did the robot put her there so that it could be raised and brutalized by these humans? You can understand.
Well,
I
make
I don't,
a point
don't
of, like,
know.
you don't remember where you came from.
Right.
You know? And they make that point of the robot, too. So I assume this is all, like, not implanted memories that she has, but, like, an implanted reality of some kind in Hilary Swank's character.
Right.
But I think... So my interpretation of the end is that daughter has passed the test that mother had put her to, and the daughter is now mother. like the AI still exists, but the role of mother in that facility has been taken on by the human itself. So,
but I still feel like she's like one bad day, like one bad screaming match at a child away from armies of mothers coming in, grabbing them all, throwing them in furnaces, and then
That's the thing that I don't think, you know, they fully answer or resolve, that they kind of push to the side and just say human behavior is deterministic. The robots have figured out how to train a human to, you know, just like you'd train a dog to do the things that they expect of them.
Yeah. I mean, it's, as I'm talking about it, it's like the sin of this movie is it's so smart that I expected a little bit more from it. Because honestly, the effect works were really good. They were exactly what they needed to sell the story. Everything felt realistic. A lot of the world building I thought was super cool. It's just, I wanted it to have something declarative, where in the end it's just kind of like looks at you and like, what do you think? And
I wish they had done, had not had the subtitle in there that, or the title card that says 13,000 days later, because I instantly figured. I did very quick 3-second math in my head. It was like 40-ish years. I know the whole plot of this movie. It was like Matrix,
even if you
knowing
seen the
trailers, Kung Fu, right?
As soon as Hilary Swank shows up, it's like,
yes. And that bothered me the most. I think I would have been more on the hook for this story if they had left that out and I was just sort of following daughter on her journey. And kind of wondering, okay, where are they going with this?
Yeah, I think it was fine during the movie. It wasn't until after that was a problem, because when I saw it was 38 years, this girl's obviously not that age. So are they in space? Is there actually an extinction event outside? Is this like a Truman Show? And she's, you know, I was trying to figure out what the twist was going to be, but I already knew. So I don't know if it changed it afterwards.
So you're looking for a twist that you haven't seen, and when it turns out to be the twist that you have seen,
right?
It's like, okay.
Yeah, struggling to figure out what the message is here. What's the future for them?
It is, I think, aside from that one minor misstep that I think it is, it's a really well-made film.
Yeah, it's better than I expected it to be.
And
it's provided some thought-provoking conversation. Do you want to move on to the Black Mirrors?
Yeah, let's do it.
Hey, before we get into the topics, the many television topics we're talking about this week, I want to talk about some bald move housekeeping. Number one, we just wrapped up our coverage of HBO's fantastic miniseries, Chernobyl. If you're looking for something to kind of watch in the slow summer month, I can highly recommend that. And we've got coverage of all 5 episodes right here in this podcast you're listening to, Bald Move TV. On the Bald Movies front, we saw last night the new the latest installment of the X-Men franchise, Dark Phoenix. And we have a full podcast on that up on the Bald Movies podcast. You can find that by searching for Bald Movies. Next week, we're going to be looking at Men in Black International. And we got a bunch of other movies coming up this summer that look great. You definitely want to subscribe to Bald Movies for all that goodness. Also, next week we'll be releasing in this feed, the Bald Move TV feed, our 50 million download celebration Q&A podcast. I just looked at the questions we got. We got some really great, thought-provoking, entertaining questions to give. We will be uploading that, a video version on YouTube, and there'll also be a podcast version in this here feed. And then finally, it's Pride Month, and we, like many other companies, have developed a rainbow-derived version of our logo, and we are donating 100% of the proceeds from these shirts. We wanted a cool shirt for to wear to the Pride Festival and parade here in Cincinnati, and while we whipped them up, we thought, hey, you know what? Let's see if anybody else wants them. 100% of those profits are going to go to the Trevor Project, which is a foundation that aims to decrease suicide amongst young LGBT members. And if you know anything about it, you know that those communities are highly at risk because of the societal pressures they face. And the Trevor Project tries to turn that around by providing these people with trained counselors and professionals to help them deal with that emotional pain they're going through. So if you want to check those out, it's at merch.baldmove.com. Of course, there's other T-shirts and memorabilia available there. But if you want the cool rainbow-looking Bald Move logos to benefit the Trevor Project, go to merch.baldmove.com and buy them sometime here in June 2019. Black Mirror, 2 episodes that we've seen. There's a third one involving Miley Cyrus. The first one is Striking Vipers, about two buddies that rekindle their friendship over a VR video game experience and find some sexual chemistry there.
We're doing all spoilers for these two episodes.
Yes, front. But I'm gonna lay out the the pretty synopsis of the episodes first, and then Smithereen is about a man who has an addiction to social media that's caused him some personal tragedy, and he starts a hostage standoff, and his only demand is to talk to the creator of the social media, which is Topher Grace playing an idealized Mark Zuckerberg type. And then, like I said, there's a Miley Cyrus, a Hannah Montana one to enjoy over the weekend.
Yeah, I've not seen that.
So what do we think? Let's start with Striking Vipers first.
The best of the two, though I felt like neither of these was particularly Black Mirror-y.
None of these were bad. None of these were particularly good.
These two episodes felt like to me that they're running out of actual Black Mirror, you know, technology type focused stories to tell. And now they're trying to dip into, you know, social issues.
Well, they've always dipped in social issues, though.
Well, sure, but now technology it's like mostly like social issues with like a side of technology. Right.
What I feel like the change in this season is that they have, instead of being like, extrapolate these current trends into the future, what do? They're now like, look at these trends that are happening in our society right now. How do we feel? What do? So, because like none of this stuff felt particularly futuristic. I guess the VR technology did. But, you know, that's like something like that is probably 10 to 15 years away. It was essentially, I thought, I don't know what you guys thought, but I thought Striking Vipers was essentially a way to get people to ask, how do we feel about transsex people?
Yeah.
Like
I thought it was broader than that. I thought it was basically every type of alternative relationship you can imagine, from like people who meet in World of Warcraft and get married,
right,
to like trans relationships, to gay relationships, to open relationships. It was like the smorgasbord of human sexual relationships.
I agree, except for like that's the thing that I thought surprised me. And again, I have just as a hobby, I've kind of been like learning about some of this stuff, and I feel like that this is stuff that people are starting to wrestle with now. But like right behind, so like, you know, it's like there's all gay acceptance, and now we're kind of like in the threshold of like trans acceptance. But right behind those are non-binary and asexual people kind of waiting in line for like, hey, we exist and we're valid too. And so this is kind of a surface level kind of like, hey, if, you know, if Jim looked like an attractive woman and I fucked her, would I be gay?
Right.
Well, no, because he looks like an attractive woman. I'm attracted to the feminine.
But we would definitely have to kiss in the rain to figure out.
Well, then, if we met in real life and you look like you, then just like if Cecily decided to start taking testosterone, get a double mastectomy and start dressing very butch and masculine, I don't know that I'd still be sexually attracted to her. I'd still love her because fundamentally the person hasn't changed, but the things I was attracted to have changed. Like, you know, a gay man in love with a trans man is still gay, and a straight man in love with a trans woman is not gay. That's how
That's different. There's the difference between like love and sexual attraction, though.
Yes.
Like, do these men not love each other? It seemed like they made a very emotional bond over that time. And
I think that's why Carl's the interesting guy, because when Dan shows up and they kiss in the rain and they're both like, nah, I didn't feel anything. Like, I don't know that I believe Carl. I don't know that I believe
really, I
Carl.
Bought it. I believed him in that moment.
So like
the body language.
So yeah, because he's definitely going home and like having sex with his girlfriend.
Yeah, but he's not enjoying it just the way the other guy's not enjoying having sex with his
wife.
Right,
it just seems
but there's no emotional, I think it's because there's not the emotional connection there.
Yeah.
So I don't think he's a gay man. I think he's just emotionally more attracted to what's the other guy's name? Not Carl.
Daniel.
Daniel. I think he's more emotionally attracted to Daniel than he is to this woman who he's physically attracted to.
Like, here's what I don't understand.
Although he plays the girl in that relationship.
Bothering me, because like it's not bothering me because like to me, you know, Dan is a very good looking man. He's played by the guy who plays Falcon in Captain America and Avengers series. He's a very, very he's a very good looking man. And so is the, you know, the Ryu Ken analog from the Striking Vipers. He's a very good-looking, masculine man. And if you find him attractive enough to kiss and fuck in the video game, then, like, your buddy being an attractive, masculine man, like, why wouldn't that work? That's where I was like,
For the same reason, I'm not attracted to every woman on the planet physically.
Yeah, no, that's true. That's like, true. But, like, you know, like, I talk a lot of shit about Gwyneth Paltrow, but, like, I don't find, it's not so much I find her physically attractive. It's like the entire package. But, like, if I, if like Cecily was plugged into a Gwyneth Paltrow frame, I wouldn't be like, get the fuck out of my bed. I don't know. That's the thing. Like, yeah. I think the interesting thing is here is Carl, and there's maybe more going on. Like, maybe Carl's bisexual, and like, I interpreted them kissing as like, and like, Dan immediately breaks away. He's like, nope, nothing. Like, and Carl's like, oh yeah, me too. Like, kind of telling a lie to preserve the friendship,
maybe, but that was the moment of honesty. Why would they do that then?
Because it's afraid he doesn't want, because like, if he said, if the one guy said no homo and the other guy's like definite homo, then the relationship, it has to end, right? It's kind of like someone being friend zoned. Like, if you're in a friend zone and you cannot detach yourself emotionally and physically from someone else, then you kind of have to no contact that. And that's really painful if you are friends. Right. So that's why I'm saying that is the, you know.
Yeah.
Like, if I was like, so me and Jim are playing a virtual game and he is like wearing a costume that makes him look like his brother. Doesn't look like Jim, but it's kind of like, kind of Jim,
yeah,
and I'm fucking his brother and I'm having a ball, but then in real life I kiss Jim and it's nothing there.
Everyone
has preferences.
I mean, it'd be different if you were fucking a female version of Jim. That's the part that's confusing to me, because he's in real life, you see him with this woman that he's having, Carl, that he's having sex with, but he identifies as a woman in this online game space. I don't know. As a woman personally, I like the way sex works for me, so I couldn't blame.
So
is
he, apparently.
Yeah. Well, see, that's the other thing.
So is that the whole thing? Is that it's a completely different like physical sensation? I wonder. I don't know. Did you notice that this VR device that they're using is the same from the Star Trek style episode from that Jesse Plemons
was in?
I did.
Yeah.
Interesting.
Thing. So I'm wondering
if
it's
those
like
little tie-ins in the show. Yeah. Huh?
Like a total body experience, how that works.
Seems like it. Because, like, that's the other thing. Is like, I think I'm pretty conventionally straight and cis, but, like, if I had a VR experience where I could see what it's like to be fucked from a woman's perspective, absolutely, I'm shoving quarters in that machine. I want to check it out.
A very big quarter.
But yeah, but then he
at
also...
At least 75 cents worth. Because the first time, maybe he just sucks, you know?
And
I want a couple spins of that roulette wheel and see what I get. But
right, and he's also saying it's not just the experience of being with a woman or even a polar bear, it's being with him personally.
Yeah
it's,
this is why I like this episode the most, is because I do think it's complicated. I don't think it's very Black Mirror-y. The VR is the only thing that really stands out here is anything you could relate to Black Mirror, but honestly, like, the stuff they're doing, like the running the gamut of kind of every type of relationship you can possibly think of here is what is interesting to me about this episode, and sort of where they land on it too, because I think their final resting place on this episode is a very mature one, a very like understanding one. Like it's clear to me that there is still, like, from Carl's side, it's emotional and physical, and he's getting that thing that he wants. Whether or not Daniel is like closeted or something and still won't admit it, but wants to be with Carl physically, but only through the game, but also with his wife emotionally. I think that's what they're playing at. And then his wife is off, you know, at the bar picking up dudes, right? Mm-hmm. So, like, they come to an understanding by the end of this.
So then they start talking. So that goes into, like, they threw in the last 5 minutes. Like, how do you think, on top of all this, how do you think about polyamorous or open or...
Yeah, that's what I mean. Yeah.
Or
right. And they even, like,
swinging relationships. Yeah.
The non-sexual relationships, the kind of, like... things that a woman goes through when a man doesn't want to have sex with her, who used to find her incredibly attractive.
Yeah, the dinner scene is very good.
That was really
mother,
good, yeah.
And yeah, how that changes.
And how they, you know, maintain, I think they maintain an emotional connection. Like, I don't think they ever lose that. Well, they start to lose it because he doesn't know how to break whatever he's feeling to her, right?
Right.
So they mm-hmm. lose that emotional connection temporarily, but I think by the end of it, they've got it back.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Like, you see, you know, her looking out at him playing with the kids and, like, thinking, oh, this is nice, you know? And then she goes out to the bar and presumably bangs some dude. So, like, I don't know.
Right.
I thought it was interesting.
Yeah.
I like yeah, I mean, like, it's one of those things where it's like, I just feel like I've somewhat spoiled myself because I...
You may have the I am mother problem that I have.
Yeah, because, like, there's this... I'm going to plug it because I really like the work she's doing, but there's this channel called ContraPoints I've been watching for almost 3 years, and when I first started watching her, she presented as a just straight-up dude. Like, she was, like, doing, like, debunking of different, like, you know, alt-right topics, like, you know... fascism, and she's like has a really good video on, like, you
she
know racism in America
for psychology or
philosophy PhD okay. in philosophy mm-hmm. and I watched her transition in real time and talk about, like, what the effects of hormones have, and, like, it, like, you watch that shit in real life, and then from there, like, all the people that she hung around with, so saw other perspectives and stuff, and started watching, like, Cat Black, and it's like, you see all this shit happening real, and then it's like, these guys, and I'm like, I just want to instantly, like, well, this is what's happening, and, like, you guys need to figure it out, but, like, there's not, to me, like, the big societal questions have been, you know, like, asked and kind of answered, and, but again, I can't begrudge people for, like, this is the first time you thought about stuff like that.
Well, but this is, like, individuals dealing with the emotional weight
you're right,
of those,
no, you're not
those
wrong.
Questions, and I think that's the most interesting part, because, like, I certainly have opinions on things like open relationships and transgender people and, like, yeah. gay people, like...
Let's hear them all right now.
Okay, I'll lay them out. I have an outlined bullet point list on GameOfThrones.com. My feelings of all of those topics. No, but, you know, it's these people, like, trying to figure out how this new revelation to them fits into their life.
Mm-hmm.
And that, to me, is interesting.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So, would you fuck me in a VR video game if I presented as a...
Oh, now we're talking. Okay.
Talk tough and polar bear? A hard-punching blonde woman.
Oh, I thought you were going to go with polar bear. Tundra.
Oh, they did fuck a polar bear, right? Yeah. See, that's the thing. I think Carl's pansexual is what it really is.
I think so.
He was just trying to.
Does pansexual include animals too?
What? No, you're not right. No, that's like I don't know what you'd have to. Interspecies sexual.
Yeah, I don't know the word for that.
Especially
When you're talking about VR, like, what does that even fucking mean?
Mm-hmm. Now you're fucking a digital avatar.
That's what I'm saying. Like Black Mirror's got to get into the get really weird, man. Like, with, like, post singularity sexuality,
they got to at least catch up to Second Life.
Yeah, yeah, exactly.
I mean, if you're not at that level, if dicks aren't raining from the sky while you're trying to have a serious conversation with your wife about
if a penguin can't fuck a cactus, then what are we even?
Yeah.
What are we even doing?
Yeah, come on.
Yeah,
step it up, Charlie Booker. You can do better.
Hang around the weirder parts of the internet. You need to really see what's out there. Do we have anything else we want to say about Striking Vipers?
No.
Mm-mm.
All right, let's move on to Smithereen. The guy who's, like, the star of this episode was also the priest on
Andrew Scott.
Oh, fuck,
you're
right.
Season 2 of Fleabag.
And he was Moriarty from the BBC Sherlock.
Oh, shit.
Sherlock, yeah, I think it's called.
And he sounds exactly like Chris O'Dowd when he gets excited.
Yeah. I like this guy a lot, and I thought that he brought a lot to the role, and there's a lot of things I really enjoyed about this. I thought it was interesting to see, like, a British version of a hostage standoff. Like, the initial responding cops didn't even have guns, and then they had to cut, like, they, and then you saw, like, they fucking de-escalated that situation. Like, I thought, as, like, comparison, like, how, you know, how many times we've seen this thing play out in, like, American television versus, you know, this kind of a British take on what this standoff would look like, and, you know, whether violence is justified and when. And I will say that they really portrayed the British snipers as borderline incompetent in this episode.
Yeah, they're terrible.
Which is good news. They don't get to fire at people
maybe,
that often.
But also,
I want
get
my special
to the range
forces
a little
to be
bit more.
Yeah, if you're taking shots where the hostage heads is, like, 18 inches away.
You don't want some rube just taking that shot.
Yeah.
Yeah, no.
Yeah, they need to get
which
better.
Which is what happened.
They need to practice. They need to practice shooting people. I thought that was kind of interesting. And, you know, there is a lot of this coming down the pike. Like, for the first time, politicians are like, wait a second, we're letting children gamble real money in these fake video games, and this, but we're crack, like, you got to fly out to Las Vegas to put money on a football game? Like, mm-hmm. what mm-hmm. the fuck are we doing? Also, you have, this is like real life. Like, when they said that we've got a whole department talking about how we can hit the dopamine centers of people's brains more effectively and harder and get it to have these behaviors be more ingrained and more addictive, that what social media is doing to us as a society, just without all those factors put in there, like just the fact it allows us to compartmentalize and silo up and get more and more ever extreme of their views. And I'm, you know, I'm obviously no exception to that. But again, I don't, what is this episode's opinion?
Did you just get a notification on your phone for your mobile game?
God, I did.
To check your,
I
to check your chest.
I'm missing a sniper challenge right now. No, I don't, what's the answer? What's the opinion? What is, like, I understand all these problems exist. And then, like, I thought it was extremely frustrating, the credit sequence, where honestly, it would have been stronger if they just ended with the fade to black.
You think so? I'm not sure.
Yeah, no, I liked it. I thought
was like just showing that everyone's going to move on, that this felt exactly. like a big moment, but it's actually not.
Exactly. Like the CEO yes. is on the sat phone and he's saying, you know what? I'm going to quit this job. You're right. I'm doing the wrong thing. I came out here for this bullshit retreat and I hate it. And, you know, after they all get this notification that they took out the, what do you call it? What do you call him?
The hostage taker.
The hostage taker.
The terrorist. The tango.
Yeah. They all get the notification. They just go right back to, he goes right back to meditation. Everyone just puts their phones down and goes back to their jobs.
At least they put their phone down.
Well, I mean, it was nicely subtle at the end where they have the guy at the stoplight check his phone and he's looking at it. The light turns and then they have to honk at him to go. Like, mm-hmm. you know, they didn't have it as obvious as like, oh, here's a guy driving down the road looking at his phone and there's another crash. Like,
yeah.
that'd be too fucking obvious.
Right.
But they hint at it subtly, like, this is, nothing has changed. Here's the road we're on. And that's what I like about this episode the most, is the sort of wake up call nature of it.
Mm-hmm.
Like, and that idea, like I said in the I Am Mother review, how this kind of, you know, one thing starts as a thing. The social media starts as like a cool way to keep in touch with friends and eventually turns into this monster that not even the person who started it has control over,
mm-hmm.
Cause it's grown beyond them. And like, once you get to that point, I feel like the question it's asking is, where do we go from here? Or alternatively, how can we prevent ourselves from getting here? Although I would argue we're already there. Like, this whole thing takes place in 2018, I think is what mm-hmm. it says. So they're saying we're already here. How the fuck do we get back to something where it hasn't spun out of control, where people aren't dying because they're so integrated on their fucking Farmville game that they have to be alerted every 30 seconds.
We just make more self-driving cars.
Sure. Maybe AI is the
yeah.
the solution to the problem.
I mean, it's,
and eventually
you're
they
not
can
wrong.
Extinct
like,
us
it,
and start over.
I like, on this side of the solution, we can't really see it. Like, but it's probably going to be some technology. It's probably going to be some mm-hmm. legislation. It's probably going to be a kind of mix of that, because asking the companies to make their product less appealing is not going to work, and asking mm-hmm. people to just put down these things that have been engineered to weaponize addiction is not going to work. So
right, mm-hmm. and to deny the government and all of these wealthy corporations, they're all access to everything about your life, they're not going to stop doing.
Yeah, because that's the other part, the fact that, like, civilians getting involved in these tense standoffs can really fuck things up in mm-hmm. a bad way. Like, having, you know, I've seen it happen at least twice on Reddit where, you know, they're like, the threads are covering a live event and they go on a witch hunt and target the wrong person or get, like, you know, endanger the police activity because people are literally like communicating what the police are doing. And
mm-hmm.
Like I said, I don't know. I haven't seen the third episode. I don't know that this is, it's a different year of Black Mirror, obviously. And the yeah. fact that they're kind of like circling back around to grapple with technological impacts we're having right now rather than like, oh, imagine how fucked up things are going to be 20 years in the
and
future.
And shorter seasons at that.
And shorter, yeah. I don't even know what to call Bandersnatch. Was that 3 episodes worth of content? Was a half episode worth of content?
I thought that was the...
Yeah.
Did they call that just the 4th season?
No, that was season 5. Mm-hmm.
Okay.
So like, if it's 2 to 3 episodes worth of content, then it's about the same size as any other Black Mirror episode season. But I don't know. I've heard the Hannah Montana episode is the one that everyone's saying is just the god awful.
Can't call her that anymore.
Okay.
The Miley Cyrus episode.
I called Will Smith the Fresh Prince of. I just called him the Fresh Prince last night. So like, yeah, I reserve the right to go back to your childhood original fame and.
I guess that's fair from that perspective.
But I just feel like that they were all thought provoking in kind of a way. But like, again, I'm like, what's the answer? Can we suggest, like, you don't have to be right. Just suggest an answer, you know, someone step forward and give an answer and let's talk about it. 'Cause the other thing is like, I keep thinking is like, are we going to go through another round of like trust busting in the next 20, 30 years? Because part of the problem is like, you know, YouTube's in a lot of hot water about their moderation policies this week. For good reason.
Oh, yeah.
But part of the problem is YouTube is the only place you can go to upload your video and find an audience online. It has an effective monopoly across the entire fucking planet.
But don't you dare try to copyright. Strike anything.
Right. But so it's like if there was like 20 different YouTubes and people could vote with their feet about like, oh, these people are letting this fucking defamation and hate speech go on, we're going to go support ones that don't. But YouTube is the clearinghouse for every fucking thing. Facebook is the de facto social media for, you know, sharing your statuses and stuff. And Instagram's got like everything's all fucking siloed. There's very little competition. And it seems like some of this stuff would be better off split. You know, if not, at least across, like, why is YouTube kind of run the fucking world? Why does Facebook run the world? Shouldn't there be, like, a UK version of Facebook that's successful? And maybe we could all jump ship to there. Canada, get your maple leaf Chinese and develop a social media that's built around people being nice and apologetic.
What stops them from taking over the world?
We can all be digital nomads, and if the Canadian way is better, we can do it. We can go that way.
Yeah, you just have to find a way to stop things from becoming corrupt. Like, the incels are a great example.
Yeah, we'll come back next week with the solution.
Yeah, we'll have that.
Need to watch this last episode, and I think we'll figure it out.
What was that? Was it Sapiens, the thing that I was reading last year? Because, like, that's like, yeah, if you believe the science in that, and why would you? you know, humans have been trying to come up with a better system of organizing ourselves for something like 70,000 years. We'll see if we'll get there.
Yeah.
Spoiler.
Give us a week.
Yeah, tune in for next week on Planet Earth.
I'm not done trying. I'll be nice to you on social media. Unless you're a dick.
Yeah. Then she'll be a vengeful angel of old. Speaking of, shall we get the good omens?
Sure.
Here's what's new in premium content for our club members.
Executive producers get to exercise their voting fingers again this week with another prestige movie poll. This week's nominees are Mystic River, The Last Samurai, and Secondhand Lions. Take your pick and seal our fate.
This Monday on the Premium feed, we open up the books and deliver a State of the Empire podcast, talking about the current condition of Bald Move and our plans for this year.
This Friday, it's Lunch 420, which given last weekend seems like a tragic missed opportunity. Ah well, lunch will be served piping hot at 1 p.m. Eastern. Come join live or warm up some leftovers when lunch is released in podcast form later that day.
If you want more Bald Move in your life, head over to support.baldmove.com to find out how you can get tons of bonus audio and video content plus ad-free feeds. You've been listening to quite a few Bald Move podcasts now, but you're not in a club? Whoo boy, you are missing out.
Not only are all of our premium club podcast feeds completely ad-free, but we have lots of other great content exclusively for people in the club.
There's a weekly lunch with Jim and Aaron where we chat with fans about anything and everything from TV and films, food, fun, life advice, and more.
But there's also Off the Clock, our premium podcast where we talk about all the shows we don't have time for on our public feeds.
Plus, you get access to our full spoiler-filled first-run movie reviews of our newly released films.
Don't forget Instant Take and Talk Podcast, where we give our hot takes and discuss television shows with our fans live and immediately after the episode airs.
With mega shows like House of the Dragon coming this summer, we're going to have lots to talk about.
Not to mention access to our fun and friendly community of club members, with exclusive Discord channels and a dedicated forum. It's one of the best places on the internet to hang out and chat about pop culture.
Bottom line, you're helping two regular type guys in the Midwest make the content you like to listen to, which some would say is rewarding to itself.
Help keep the lights on and the bits flowing at Bald Move.
And get some awesome content for yourself. Head to support.baldmove.com to join the club today. Good Omens. We saw two episodes last week. We saw four more episodes this week. I thought the third episode was particularly good. I quite enjoyed what the 30-minute long cold open of these angels, the angel and demon yes. forging a relationship slowly over the course of the millennia. I quite enjoyed the characterization of the Antichrist and his little mm-hmm. arc. I
enjoyed the resolution of the series.
Mm-hmm. I like the resolution, the fact that it is definitely open for a sequel, but it wouldn't feel complete. Like it would also kind of feel like an interesting coda if there wasn't.
Yeah, I haven't read the book, but we did have a few feedbackers that said that it followed pretty closely to how the book went too.
Yeah,
so that's got to be satisfying for those book snobs like myself.
I know Alexis has read it, and she said she really liked the series too. So
yeah, good. I thought Tennant and Sheen were continued to be the kind of engine that made everything work.
Yeah.
So good.
I really continue to enjoy John Hamm's Archangel Gabriel.
Yeah.
The whole, you know, his the whole idea that this is just like, well, we gotta have the war, because how else can we win? Like, I mean, that's like Terry Pratchett at his best is when he kind of like holds up humanity in a kind of a non-judgmental kind of, like, to highlight the insanity, but also the fact that we all at some points in our life go along with it. Mm-hmm. You know, like we've all had that moment where we're going to fight a fight that probably doesn't need to be fought, but fuck it. We're going to, you know, we think we can win. The exploration of kind of human nature through like these supernatural means, like, you know, to reveal something interesting about humanity by looking at an angel and a demon, you know, and their relationship. I thought it was really, really great. There's mm-hmm. a couple of really funny things, like Crawley coming, like hot footing it through the church.
Yeah.
Because he's on holy ground.
I loved him driving through the fire.
Him driving through the fire. Like, David Tennant plays really good crazy man.
Oh, yes.
You don't, I mean, I guess that was part of his appeal of Doctor Who, is he brought that kind of, like, every once in a while he'd just get shouty. And
he had a great turn in Harry Potter, which you missed out
yeah,
on. But
Barnabas yeah. Crouch Jr. Yeah. yeah. Him playing just kind of like batshit. Is real fun, and mm-hmm. him, like, some of the things of him rolling around in that flaming mobile and then it getting flying apart at the end.
Let me ask you this.
Yeah.
What's with the miracles? So I got the impression the demon
uh-huh.
was perfectly willing to do as many miracles as he felt like.
Uh-huh.
The angel, not so much. Am I reading that right? Like, every time, like, Aziraphale needed to do a miracle to save them, he was, like, doing the most minor miracle possible and or refusing to do it at all.
I think it goes back to, like, you know, when Satan was tempting Jesus, and, like, one of the things he said is, like, you know, just tell these rocks to become bread and eat. Why are you starving? And Jesus...
That's what I got, too.
It's kind of like, it's like an angel's humility that, like, if you use a miracle, it'd be for someone else's benefit. Mm-hmm. Like, just to clean your clothes, you need a demon to do something selfishly.
Yeah.
But by the same thing, there's a couple points where I think Crawley had a hard time doing a miracle, like a miraculous for, like, the greater good, because
that's not his
ballywick, so then that's where the angel would step in. Uh-huh. I don't know that it was a flaw that they didn't actually come out and say that, because it's kind of
fun to
try to figure it out and debate and, like, you know.
And I ended up reading that same thing into it, and I found the whole tension between, like, when are you able or allowed, almost, when is a miracle permissible to be an interesting thing in the lore.
Right. But I thought they missed a couple examples to make that, like, well, for example, when they show up to the former orphanage and all the paintballs get replaced with real guns.
Mm.
Like, I thought the joke would be that the demon replaces it with guns, but the angel makes sure that everything miraculously misses.
Yeah.
But it seems like Crawley did both, and that Aziraphale kind of was, like, along for the ride.
Yeah.
I think so.
I mean, when I saw it, was I thought it was more of like a power thing. Mm. Or maybe they were just like in a friendship kind of way, keeping score, like, no, it's your turn. No, it's your turn. I'm not going to do this type of thing.
Because they did have a sort of an understanding that they would, neither of them would do anything that's in their nature, really. Like, you know, the demon's not going to go off and tempt people. Mm-hmm. And the angel is not going to go necessarily try to make everybody do good things or help everyone.
Because that's...
They're just going to do nothing
because
together.
Because they show, like, over the centuries, them trying very hard, and they just, like, neutralize
each other.
They always
end
up in the same place, so,
yeah,
opposing each other.
If that's what we could do. It's kind of like, you know, but it's
that Black
one of those,
Knight scene.
It's one of those thought experiments of, like, you know, if everyone on Earth would just stop going to war, how much of our budget we could save on, like, making the world better, and we wouldn't have to go to war in the first place. But of course, that's terribly naive. It never worked.
We could run our bookstores, and we could do whatever demons do. I don't know. Drive fancy cars and fuck. Probably he fucks. I don't know.
Oh yeah,
Crowley.
Demons.
I mean, canonically, that's how you got the Nephilim in the Bible.
That's true.
Saw the hot girls and the hot earth girls and how gone wild they were, and like, I want to get some of that. I want to manifest myself a body with genitals. And
at the very least, you're drinking all the time. I know that much.
It was only the girls. There was no gay demons. It was just the daughters of man.
Well, they're fallen angels, but they're not that far fallen.
That's
come
right.
on.
No, they have their standards.
Yeah, God wouldn't allow that to happen.
No same sex debauchery and. but there was a couple of other things that I thought some of the special effects work was a little bit dodgy, but honestly, they took this kind of cartoony approach that everything kind of fell. It's like criticizing the graphics in Little Big Planet. Like, you know, well, this dude's made out of felt. What do you want? Mm-hmm. Everything kind of just worked.
Yeah. And I liked that the, Adam, the, was that his name?
Yeah.
Adam, yeah, the actual Antichrist, came around to doing this thing with his friends where they're all teamed up again. And the meeting at the military bunker was probably the funniest thing, that they all just showed up at the same time and the kids just rode by that guy.
Yeah.
But I loved that the four of them were exact, like, counterparts to the four horsemen of the apocalypse.
Yep.
And
they
were
riding bicycles, the horsemen are riding motorcycles,
yeah,
and how the kid's innocence in, like, naming the dog, like, kind of neutering the hellhound, like, you know, the form follows function. So when he envisions him in as a, like, you know, this, like, adorable dog, it fundamentally changed the nature of the hellhound.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
and I feel like that's what also saved Adam in the end, is the fact that, like, his dog was getting scared about what he was doing, and that, you know, it wasn't just his friends that recalled him; it was that. Like, he saved the hellhound saved him. There's a nice symmetry there. It's pretty, really,
I think,
sweet.
I'm going to put it on a bumper
kind
sticker.
Of similar to what they did with the witch finder versus... He wasn't a witch hunter, he's a witch finder versus the actual witch.
Mm-hmm.
I really liked how Michael McKean and Miranda Richardson had that little nice meet-cute throughout the whole thing. It was gentle and it was cute, and the stakes never felt really high because you kind of knew the thing. I actually, going in that final episode, I'm like, I wonder how dark I can possibly expect this, because on the one hand it's Terry Pratchett, but on the other hand, you know, Neil Gaiman, I've seen American Gods, and that shit's pretty bleak.
Mm-hmm.
So, like, where is the midline between the vanilla and the chocolate on the flavor scale? And turns out, Neil Gaiman seems like he's more of a softie at heart, because this was all good feels, no bad feels.
I'm halfway through the Watchmen comic book, and things get dark.
Well, that's Alan Moore, right?
Yeah.
Neil Gaiman wrote part of that.
No.
He was definitely part of it. Not sure how much.
For seriously?
Yeah, for seriously. Maybe he just wrote the Black Pirate Freighter, Black Freighter stuff or something like that.
Or maybe was he involved in, like, the spinoffs? Because there's a whole bunch of, like, Watchmen spinoffs in the last decade. All right, well, I learn something new every day.
I don't know if they're gonna do a follow up to this, but I would very much welcome it. Although I don't know that it could possibly have the same humor. I don't think it would have the same style without both of them writing.
The hook here is, like, much of the plot revolved around the very good prophecies of Agnes, and it seems like the sequel, the thing that changed is, like, the humans are just throwing that away, so they're going to wing it all.
Yeah.
I think
that could be interesting.
You can tell, like, an equal and opposite story, where, like, because, like, it does, like, you know, part of the idea of God's ineffable plan is it's no matter what you do, it's going to come true. Like, everything went wrong to make everything go right. So that's I think that's, like, if you're going to conceive of a cool God, that's the way to do it. Like, you know, God's actually a very, very good person. And it turns out this is, like, literally the only way you can give an intelligent being, like, any kind of meaningful cosmic free will. And it's really fucked up and convoluted, but if you trust the process, it's going to get us to a good spot. Like,
well, one of the
fine,
most,
I'm cool with that.
Like, one of the biggest reasons that I want a sequel to this is because of the reveal at the end where they show you the switcheroo that's happened. Because that doesn't need to happen. Like, as part of an ineffable plan, what is the point of fooling your underlings after the situation has resolved itself? That's what I want to know. So it almost implies that there is some greater fulfillment to the ineffable plan that I would like to see in a
you know, and I was dumb because I didn't know that they switched. I thought the gag was that Crawley, by his self-sacrifice, had, like, become angelic enough that holy water did no longer killed him, and that Aziraphale had become enough of, like, a creature comfort, like, comfy guy, that, like, hellfire no longer could burn him and torment him. Yeah. That was, like, a sign of personal growth.
They're both, like, more human at this point than angel or demon.
Yeah. Like, they couldn't be affected by those things anymore. And I was actually kind of disappointed that, they just did a switcheroo. But not briefly. That's fine, too. It's just that was my pet theory of what was happening.
Yeah. I figured it out as soon as we figured out that people could switch bodies. Yeah. Oh, I was like, damn. Oh, yeah, this is...
Oh, and then the prophecy actually said, I feel like the dumbest person alive because the prophecy is like, choose carefully what face you take.
Yeah.
Although it was misspelled...
A lot of it was that, like, choose your faces.
Or...
Yeah, that old English stuff was...
It wasn't actually... I thought it was just a typo.
No,
It's actually just old English.
Yeah, like, okay. There's a lot of dangling E's and F's were spelled... where
capitalized words
S
where
and...
they...
Huh.
I don't know. Okay. Should be, shouldn't be.
Well, I'm the dumbest person alive. Not you.
Our powers combined to make us still kind of right.
Question. Would you have it in you to burn the second book of prophecies at the end?
No, I'm very much...
I can do it.
I'm very much the Biff who grabs the Atlas, or the Almanac, and goes and makes $200 billion.
Yeah, I have a kind of like a life's axiom that, like, no accurate information can truly be bad.
It was her life's purpose up until then, and it seems like something she's really good at, being a witch herself... I don't know. I would at least, like, give it one read through and decide whether or not I'm going to do all the deep research I did for the first book.
But yeah, burn it? Like,
just gone forever? That's it?
Yeah, it belongs in a museum. You should give it to Indiana Jones.
But it was also constricting to her life, right? It's like,
yeah,
that's true.
You know, she wasn't a person until she gets rid of that book.
Right.
And she's Agnes.
And part of God's ineffable will is to eventually grant humanity some sort of free will or free moral agency, then they kind of got to go there.
But nothing's ever really gone. The Bentley came back. The bookstore came back.
That's true.
And it doesn't seem like there's like not there. It did seem that holy water and hellfire is the true death. Like there's no like you can remanifest a material body. I thought that was pretty funny too. The non-demonic possession by Aziraphale towards the end with Miranda Richardson. Some of that stuff was pretty droll, but. Yeah, it did feel like a demon, like when that one demon had the bucket of holy water dropped in on him. There was also this like thing where every time someone said, is that holy water? And someone said the holiest. Like, what does that even mean?
God pissed this out himself.
Yeah, was that like, that's from God's fucking own commode? Because what is that? They kept on saying it, and I'm like, that's going to pay off. Maybe it pays off in a sequel. Because I don't know how many of these like gags, because I read an interview with Neil Gaiman. He said that him and Pratchard had kind of left it open for a sequel and had talked about sequel possibilities over the years, but they never had time to do it. Like, I wonder how much of this shit is, like, building towards, like, the sequel. But
sure. You want to leave those doors open, I think.
Yeah, why not?
And they sure did, and I welcome it.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Anything else we want to talk about as far as gods? Okay. Before we move on, I want to talk about the club, club.baldmove.com. One of the most popular features about judging by downloads and engagement is Lunch with Jim and Aaron. It's something we do every Friday. We just got done recording it before we did this podcast. And it's a premium feature only available for club members, where Jim and I just talk about random stuff and people send us topics to talk about. This week, someone asked us about an old lunch we did back in July 31st, 2015. And it's where Jim and I were playing around with this face rig software that was able to morph us into a tiger and a cheeseburger and a cat and a demon man and Santa Claus. And some hilarity ensued. If you go to the lunch article for this week, June 7th, 2019, I actually linked that classic episode of Lunch with Jim and Aaron. If you want to watch the whole thing and see what it's all about, it's kind of a blast from Bald Move Pass. I also time-linked right to our shenanigans with the face rig if you want to go right there. It's a great way to preview that content. You can also go to club.baldmove.com. There is free previews galore on that page, and you can sign up for a free 30-day trial if it sounds like it's something that's your speed. And it helps us keep our independent podcast going at club.baldmove.com. Hey, Maid's Tale. We saw the first season, Cecily. We actually did a couple of Bald Move TV episodes on it. And it was a tough watch. Season two, we gave up after two or three episodes because it was just painful. It was painful. It's like, we weren't learning anything new.
It's torture porn.
Yeah, we're just finding new ways you can torment and women and strip them of their agency. And like, it does seem, I saw this trailer for season three, and it seems like that this is now the vengeance arc where the handmaids are organizing and they're taking it back to the new Zion or Gideon, whatever.
Gilead.
How do you feel about this? I should ask you.
I'm curious about this season for the second and third season, just because it, you know, went away from the books. It's past Margaret Atwood's material, which could be interesting. But after those first episodes of season two, it's just really hard to watch. And it's not for me. It's preaching at me. But I'm the person who's affected by it. I can put myself there. You know, you can see that women are oppressed all the time in really horrible ways. And it's hard to watch. And I feel like the people who should be watching it and need to be watching it to understand the subtext are not. Mm-hmm. That's kind of how I feel about it. But then again, I don't know what these stories are doing.
I do like that this is getting out in the cultural consciousness, because it's really cool. Or it's not cool, it's effective. Mm-hmm. When like a squad of handmaids shows up at like a state legislature,
right,
and just sits there
to protest.
And silently sits in the balcony and watches these people cast their votes. Like, and I don't know, it might be a tool for empathy if you've got like a partner that doesn't get it, or you've got some family member or friends that like television and they're not like anti, or they're kind of on the fence or don't see why it should be important. But me, I think what I'm going to do, because Ohio turns out we're in the middle of a battleground state in this issue. Like, we're not the worst. Thank God for fucking Alabama. But were it not for Alabama, we'd have and Georgia. Wait, is it Georgia? Both. If it were not for those two states, we'd have the most restrictive abortion legislation in the union. And I think instead of the hour or two I'd spend watching Handmaid's Tale to say nothing about podcasting, I'm going to write to my state representatives and my federal representatives, my representative, my senators, and I'm going to call their office, and I'm going to, there's a couple of them that I'm going to say, right on, thanks for standing strong. And there's a bunch more I'm going to take to task, and maybe do that every week, because I just don't know what I'd get watching it other than bummed out and more angry than I already am.
Right. And I think we've shared our views on those issues many times.
Yeah.
In many different ways.
But it's just like, God, it's really hard to watch. If that's what you need to motivate you to action or keep you focused, or as a tool to tell other people like why this is important, then I support it. And again, I'm glad it's being made, because it does seem like it's effective in certain things. I don't know what I'm taking from it.
Bald Move proudly supports your right to watch this show.
To choose to watch Handmaid's Tale, yeah.
But hashtag not my television.
yeah.
We're not gonna cover it for this season that's coming out in real time.
But we are going to be primed to take on Harlots. that comes out next month, season 3 of Harlots, which also tackles some tough issues,
but it's also
just a fundamentally more fun to watch.
I think. Yeah, it's so great to have like a period piece where these things aren't exactly, you know, there's not going to be an entire house run by black people, men and women, especially a woman in charge.
Right.
In this time period.
It's a little bit more aspirational, but that feels good rather than regressive.
Right, exactly. And you're not going to have so many like openly gay characters who are finding acceptance amongst other people.
Uh-huh.
And they find a way to make it work in this time period because it's not without its struggles. Uh-huh. And I think it's great. I'm really excited to cover that one.
Hard things to watch in Harlots too.
Oh, yeah. Season 1, very rapey. Very rapey.
Lots of sexualized violence in 17th century harlotry, turns out. But we'll be watching that. That's the other thing, is like the final thing that is kind of the nail to the Bald Move coverage of Handmaid's Tale Coffin is that they were going to overlap a little bit. And like, it's a lot. That's a lot to be watching.
We're doing this for Kitty Carter.
Yeah, for Kitty Carter. I can't do. I don't got the bod.
I didn't. Yeah, I lost it.
You don't. You have to get.
I decided to just not go for it this time.
You have to get. You're gonna have to get it back. You got what, 5 weeks left to get it
I'll
back.
I'll practice.
Okay, that is Bald Move Television for this week. That's a lot of television, y'all.
So much.
You can send feedback to TV@baldmove.com. We'll be back next week with, I don't know, every Monday we roll in, we see what the new trailers are, and we decide what to talk about on Friday.
And we miss half the trailers because they're not listed on anybody's services page.
Yeah, Netflix likes to just shovel out content. They shovel out so much they can't even properly mark. Here's the thing.
It's ridiculous.
I tried to find I Am Mother. Couldn't find any of my like initial screens. I typed in I, space, uh-huh. A-M space.
Legend?
M-O-T. I got the H. I Am Moth before Netflix suggested Mothman. On the visible grid of like 20 movies it was suggesting. Yes. Like,
Netflix can't keep up with their own stuff.
What in the fuck? How can you not? Like, this just came out today. It's like a Netflix original. You spent a ton of money on it. Did you forget that you did? Like, I don't get it. I don't understand. And it's so weird because...
Especially since it wasn't a terrible movie. So you think they released a ton of stuff. They put some of the ones they know are going to be B-movies in the back.
The other funny thing that I've realized is that, like, I almost... Like, Netflix is such a huge lead in this game that a lot of times when I went to go watch Good Omens, I found myself starting up Netflix.
Yeah.
Or, like, when I was wanting to do Catch 22, it's like I'd find myself starting up Netflix because you just assume it's all going to be on Netflix. Like, oh, yeah, right, this is a Hulu and this is an Amazon. Mm-hmm. That's a problem for Hulu and Amazon and for all who enter this space.
Well, yeah. I mean, they're taking it back. All these good shows you just named are on those programs.
Yeah, you're right. Mm-hmm. You're right. And if Netflix keeps miscategorizing and losing their new content, this doesn't seem like it's a great strategy for their success. But... hey, we'll be back next week with another crop of television. Thanks for watching with us. We'll see you then. Until then, I'm Aaron.
I'm Jim.
I'm Cecily.
Have a great weekend. Bye.